funding. But it was expected of yourself. What is good about this? And what happened to that arrangement? And then over and above those things that you requested yourself to speak to us of finances and all that. I hope you have been helped to be connected to the second industrial revolution. Unless if you are so advanced that you are in the fourth. Because the screen is empty, you're not going to use the screens, you've got nothing on the screens, no bioscope. Try the bioscope of it. Well, we are aware that it is not normal with you. We know you arrive in time, and probably that's why you have been welcomed when you arrive. Something that doesn't happen to many. If we are having all these challenges, one would say that we do have presentations, the two of them. We had a presentation for the quarter one and quarter two, and then we requested the financials, and then now we have got the one that deals with the item of today directly. And then which one I'm going to start with? I think we can start with filling up on the outstanding in information in relation to the quarter one, quarter two in terms of financials, and then on the base of the hard copies that we're having. I hope that we have got hard copies as well. And then as the electronics are being addressed, then we'll be getting into this other presentation. I just hope that I'm not confusing you. But if there was a plan of how you're going to roll this thing out, and then you may proceed with your plan A. Proceed. We do have copies, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Nashile. I just want to, with your permission, to start by confirming that my colleagues that you mentioned, members of the board, Madame Paladi, on the extreme right, represents business. Madame Fass represents government. Mr. Mbongwe represents the trade unions. And I am the chair. My name is Mthunzi Mdwaba, representing, appointed by the minister to the position. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to thank you first for the opportunity to address you. And I do want to take this opportunity, now that I'm seeing you for the first time since we provided you with real entertainment rather than the entertainment you referred to today, I'd like to thank you for having attended the Productivity Awards last year, October, during Productivity Month. It's something we don't take lightly, that we do appreciate, and we would like to take the opportunity as well to invite all the other honorable members in October. It's the same thing every year. It's Productivity Month every year. We have Productivity Awards every year. So you are more than welcome. Yes, so please just keep that open and make sure that you rally the troops to celebrate productivity in October. Of course, the CEO, Mr. Motiba, is with me. And so we also have our CFO with us, who's going to cover the areas that you referred to in terms of gaps and so on. But if you allow me, Chair, I'd like to just give a little bit of a background to this, and we will not repeat, hopefully, the items you already heard on the 20th of February. And I think that is important from a contextualization point of view for you to know that our being here as the board is due to the fact that on the 20th of September, when we had the annual general meeting of Productivity SA, which is made up of all its stakeholders, and the stakeholders are pretty much made up of the tripartite, together with the civil society, we were instructed by our stakeholders at the AGM to do two things amongst others. One was to go and address NEDLAC with regards to the challenges we've had and what possible solutions we think we can suggest. And the other was to address yourselves as soon as we can be able to have an opportunity to do so, and that's why we are here today. The second matter that I need to just mention in passing, Chair, is that my colleagues here will come in at given points with your permission, particularly with reference to certain items that I will indicate at that time. And lastly, I shall not bore you with going through every slide. I'm assuming you've had the opportunity to cast your eye on the slides, but we'll refer to the slides in passing. I forget one more thing. It's lovely to see some of the honorable members here, Chair, other than seeing them in Geneva at the ILC, some of them that are here in front of us. The one has gone out, but Honorable Van Skalvik, it's lovely to see you in South Africa for a change. So, Chair? So, Chair, I think that for us, what I think is key, if you look at the page one, slide one and slide two, are just to help you, guide you with the program as to where we are going. Slide 3 and slide 4. Slide 3 has got a title, Productivity SA Mandate. You would see something already that is trite, something that you're aware of, but we just repeat it so that it never is forgotten, that we are established in terms of Section 31 of the Employment Services Act of 2014 as a juristic person with the mandate to promote employment growth and productivity and thereby contributing to South Africa's socio-economic development and competitiveness. I think when people ask me normally, Chair, because you know sometimes we tend to be very complicated in the way we explain what we do and who we are, I normally just say to people that the most important thing to be known is that the rationale for our existence and for our establishment was always to contribute to the creation of jobs, was always to contribute to the retention of those jobs, making sure that we do not lose jobs, and thirdly was always to contribute to the competitiveness of the economy within our country. You know, in the main, those are the three main areas. You know, then we can talk about detail and so on as to how we do this. And of course, as we do that, research and knowledge management programs become a very important part of what it is we do. The next page on slide 5 talks about strategic partnerships and alliances. And again, that's very self-explanatory in itself, and I'm not going to delay and belabor it and waste time. But I think slide 6 is very important. Slide 6 is entitled The Change Drivers. Change drivers, you will see, Chair, refers to the expanded legislative mandate in terms of the Employment Services Act of 2014 and other socio-economic policies. And I think on that area, I just want, if possible, Chair, this is where I'd like my colleague, Mr. Mbowe from the unions, to just talk on that, on the Employment Services Act, and then I'll come back.
Thank you, Chair. Well, the Employment Services Act was concluded in 2014. The significance of 2014 is that it was 20 years since 1994, and the challenge of unemployment remained. If you look at all our elections, all political parties talk about job creation, but we still have that challenge even in 2014. It is now 2019. The challenge of unemployment remains. Government pleaded with us to empower them to deal with the challenge through this Employment Services Act. It's our view that we don't see concrete funding of the Unemployment Services Act by government. It remains a major challenge. On the issue of ongoing job losses, you will recall that last year there was a national job summit. Whilst government committed to a moratorium on retrenchments, business did not. And the challenge is because you have to go to court to argue about the fairness of those retrenchments. And therefore, that's where productivity comes in, because through industrial engineers, you can engage from an informed position on some of the options that are there. Currently, we don't think productivity has that capacity and enough industrial engineers to assist. Thanks.
Thank you for that opportunity, Chair, and thank you, colleague. So, Chair, the next point on that slide, the change drivers, relates to the impact of globalization and the fourth industrial revolution on the socio-economic industrial industry landscape. You will be aware that in 2 days, on the 1st of March, in Zimbali, which is where I think the DG is and the minister right now, we are having the Global Commission on the Future of Work report launch, the South African version. We launched this already internationally on the 22nd of January, together with our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who was the co-chair of the Global Commission on the Future of Work. And the future of work, which of course some people talk about as if it's still on its way, has been with us for a while. It's not a house that has windows and doors waiting for us to step in. it is happening at a very huge, huge rate, and we cannot be missing as Productivity SA in playing a pivotal role in ensuring that our country has at its core productivity, in ensuring that we find ways of creating jobs and retaining the jobs that we have. But I think more importantly, when you talk about how we rank in the world, whether it's in terms of the Global Competitiveness Index or we talk about the World Economic Forum Index, you know, it gives certain interpretations by different people. Some people don't agree. But the one thing you cannot refuse to accept is how the countries of the world are looked at and how they are rated in terms of how they behave, in terms of how they perform from a productivity point of view. So if 100 is the ultimate that we should be reaching as countries that are productive, it is accepted that 60 is the global average at the minimum that you should have. Okay, so 100 is where we should be in a utopia. 60 is the average that you should have at a minimum. South Africa sits at 51. So we sit 9 points way below 60 as a productive nation. That should tell you that we have a huge challenge and we have a crisis. We know we have a crisis in many ways. We can see the rate of unemployment we have in the country. We can see the rate at which we lose jobs. But some people may take it lightly. But if you're looking for other indicators, that's a definite indicator that shows you that we have a challenge. The competitiveness outlook of South Africa insofar as SMEs are concerned, we all know it's trite and it's accepted that across the world, small medium enterprises make up 90% of formal businesses and provide employment to over 60% of the labor force and contribute over 35% to the GDP. But what we must apply our minds to, and I would like my colleague Mepaladi to speak on this, is that the turnaround solutions program that you heard about, the reality of how this works is that when somebody knocks on our doors and says, intervene, and I mean, I want to again oversimplify it. Somebody says, problem, we're going to lose jobs in about 3 months unless something happens. We have the unenviable situation of having to turn them back. We have the unenviable situation of saying no, because we do not have money to do that. So, Madam Pallad, if you can just speak on that that area, please.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, Honourable Chair. I think it is sad to see big companies in South Africa closing down, and that is causing a lot of retrenchment, and where productivity can have a hand in assisting them to have a low retrenchment, because productivity is supposed to be promoting the employment growth. When it comes to SMEs, it is even worse because we are the future of employment in South Africa at the SMEs, but unfortunately, due to the lack of funds and due to the lack of response that people are not getting out of productivity, as say, it becomes sad that when they knock for intervention in terms of all the programs that they have, productivity SA has got to stop other programs, and that now makes the SMEs to be left out in this stuff. Thank you so much, Jeff.
And as you know, we had to make a very difficult and painful decision as the board. And the painful and difficult decision we had to make was to suspend the Turnaround Solutions Program. That is a travesty. That is something we should all be taken to task for, Chair, because we cannot as a country actually be pushed to a position where we have to suspend a program whose existence is meant to ensure that people stay in jobs. We cannot be placed as a country in a situation where you sit and deliberate. I mean, it took us at least 3 board meetings and many referrals from the audit committee that Madam Fass comes from for us to finally make a decision that says there's nothing else we can do but suspend the program. Otherwise, we are going to be in the on the headlines of newspapers as having, you know, failed in our duties, because we have a fiduciary duty at the board of Operative DSA, and also we owe this to the country. So for us, I think it is within this context, and within the context of the socio-economic challenges facing South Africa that we all know about, within the context of a sluggish economy that is compounded by a lot of challenges that we have. And I think something that the CEO may have mentioned in the past, which I'll come back to in another slide, that we have a national development plan. A national development plan that says nothing about productivity. Now, you may ask, how did this happen? For it to have happened, it means we're always sleeping on the job, all of us. Our predecessors before this board, the people who were there, should never have allowed a situation where we have an NDP and we don't scream loud enough to say, where's productivity in this NDP? So I think Productivity SA should also take responsibility for it. But it has to be noted that our custodian Department of Labor and all the other department of governments need to take responsibility too. We should have been there. The top 20 leading countries in productivity in the world, top 20 that lead in productivity, in terms of that 60-100 I was talking about, and we sit on 51. The countries that lead all have at least a chapter on productivity in their national development plan. A chapter, a whole chapter, and we don't even mention it. It's not there, right? So I think for me, in terms of our technical competence and in terms of what sits inside Productivity SA that makes it such a valuable entity that needs to be recognized and supported and funded, I'd like to ask Madam Fass just to talk about issues relating, for instance, to industrial engineers and other related issues.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chairperson of the committee. I mean, one of the major investment decisions that foreign investors make is around the issue of policy certainty. And unfortunately, since the end of the 2008-09 financial crisis, South Africa has not been at the front end or first in the queue of those foreign investment decisions. And part of it is around policy uncertainty. And it would seem strange, or maybe it's not usual for us to think about productivity institutions forming a major part of ensuring policy certainty. Because when foreign companies come here and they invest throughout a value chain, they want to know that the small businesses, the SME supplier network, actually comply with international standards. Yeah? So that they are ensured that when they want goods from those SME suppliers, it will come at the right time, at the quality that they want, that's internationally accredited, at the cost that is reasonable, and so forth and so forth. So there must be reliability. So we haven't recovered as well as other countries in the world post-2009. We are still below 1% growth. And that is a travesty for a country that actually has so much potential. So when we look, therefore, at policy certainty, when we go out, like the President has been trying to get these billions into the country, we have to also give assurance to those foreign investors that when you come here, that you can be assured that you will have companies that know what it's like to run an efficient business, that it's reliable, that you don't need to run to a Singapore, etc., etc. So for us, therefore, that if you don't show up there well-dressed, like we all are here today, nobody takes you seriously. And similarly, when you don't have money, yeah, then everybody believes that your domestic supporters probably don't take you seriously. So why should we as foreign investors take you seriously? And that is what we're saying. The face of productivity in South Africa has not been supported well. And therefore, how do we assume to go and impress foreign investors? Those billions that are there, where will those companies go instead? They go to Japan, because there's an assumed culture that these guys work hard. What is the culture that we project to the rest of the world from South Africa? The Germans, we know, German precision. The word precision and excellence are associated with being German. What do we associate with South Africa? So, and that is the kind of culture that productivity is supposed to be. Excellence. African exuberance. Because that's what we are, we're exuberant. But we're also precise, or we should be precise, in our particular way. So, for me, that's a major part of this. We need to reinvent productivity SA as being the center of excellence, of African excellence. And something that I think we don't know often is that we also drive productivity culture in the rest of Africa. Because that, colleagues, is where our new investment pattern should be. South Africa already, much of our manufactured export go to the rest of Africa. It doesn't go to China, it doesn't go anywhere else. And manufactured exports are extremely important. That's where our money comes from, not from commodity exports. So if the other countries in the rest of Africa are able to absorb what we have through our cooperation with them, the whole continent is so much better. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. So, Chair, I think to what Madam Fass has just said now, for instance, the African role, the colleagues, honourable members may be aware that Productivity SA already serves as a secretariat for PAPA, for the Pan-African Productivity Association. Because we are held in high regard by all our brothers and sisters, but in reality, they put into practice much more what we say. You know, there's a saying that you may have heard before where people say, if the GDP of a country was to be measured by rhetoric, South Africa would be the wealthiest country in the world. Because we talk a good talk, Chair. We really do. But we never implement. We don't. We put up Productivity Institute, probably one of the few countries that thought of it way before anybody did. But then we just leave it there. We don't know what it's supposed to do. You come up with the Employment Services Act, and then you don't fund it. And you do all other activities, for instance, the minimum wage discussions. When the minimum wage discussions happened, Productivity SA was never invited. That's unacceptable. You cannot talk about wages without talking about productivity. It's an inbuilt incongruent situation that you have. Convention 131 of the ILO, in which minimum wage setting is based on, talks about a lot of elements, like looking at the relative cost of living, looking at all the dynamics that are peculiar to a particular country, but also talks about productivity. But we had to push ourselves in at the last minute to have a say in the discussions as everything was ending. And it is because of this that when we had the AGM, our stakeholders turned around and said, hey, we know what you guys do. We know what you do. We want more of what you do. We want the workplace program that you have, which has always been funded by TTI, and I'll come back to it just now. And we say, no, we can't do more. They say, no, but that's unacceptable. How can you not do more? We say, well, we can't, because we don't have the money. It's as simple as all that. And it was because of this that they insisted that we must come here. So when you look at slide 7, I'm also not going to go through it, because I've already covered it in passing. The functions and value proposition, it's all there, typed out. I'm not going to go through it. Slide 8, the target market and core business stages of interventions, simply demonstrates how we actually get involved and what it is we do with the companies, as Madam Palati was talking about companies and how, when they're in trouble, we get involved. Slide 9, target industries and priority sectors, is absolutely key to be noted, because we need to be alive with what is happening in the market and be able to see the shifts and focus our energies in the areas where we can be able to take our country in a positive trajectory. When you look at slide 10 is a very important slide, because it talks about additional obligations that we have been given as Productivity SA. So when we had the job summit in October last year, so you were at the Productivity Awards, Chair, you'll remember that my speech was all about how the President himself needs to lead by example. The President himself needs to embrace productivity. So I must tell you that I spend lots of time, because the President tweets, you know, and his team tweets as well, at Cyril Ramaphosa, you know, on Twitter. So I tweeted every day in October to say, Mr. President, when you stand up and you ask for funds and billions to come into the country, you could maybe start by talking about productivity. Because when those funds land here, those billions, they need to be used in a productive manner. There's no point you get the funds and then they get used and they disappear because actually, you know, you haven't used them properly. So in all of that, ultimately when we got to the Job Summit, which happened to also be in October, we, again, similarly to the minimum wage discussions, we pushed our way into that. And I keep using the way pushed our way very deliberately, because I need you to understand, we cannot have a mandate to do things, but have to beg to be involved, and have to always knock on doors and windows to be involved. It cannot happen like that. We are asking you to bring everybody to account on this, to help us in ensuring that we have a productivity movement that understands that having productivity at the core of everything you do is essential. It's not a nice to have, it's a must have. So you will see that at the job summit that we pushed our way into, we ended up having some people giving responsibility to Productivity SA. So Productivity SA in the framework agreement of the job summit has a lot of responsibilities, things it must do. Now you must remember, we mentioned, and I'll come to the slide, which is the next slide. You'll remember that I mentioned that in 2014, when the Employment Services Act was passed, we all slept on the job. So pre that, we had certain responsibilities, but when the Employment Services Act came into play, we had an expanded role, a hugely, hugely expanded role. But no one thought of saying, at the same time as you have this act, you need to put the requisite funds into place to support that which we said we want to enact, which is a, you know, seems logical, but it never happened. So when you go to the job summit and you are asked to do more things and yet you don't have money, it becomes a problem. So the key challenge slide, the slide 11, is probably the most important slide in this whole pack. So even if you forget everything else, I think that slide is the most important slide. Because it shows what it is we're about, the expanded role, but you will see that there was no funding appropriated by Parliament for this expanded mandate, as I've already said. And this is at the heart of Productivity South Africa's financial woes. It results in persistent bailout applications to the Department of Labour. Of course, this has been exacerbated. This is not the cause. I want to be underline this. The cause is not what I'm just about to say. But what I'm about to say exacerbated the situation. So when the Department of Labour decided the UIF would be the one giving us money, when the money is late, as we found it had been all the time over the years, when the money doesn't arrive, as it hasn't happened recently because of many reasons of alleged and found investigated maladministration in certain areas of the turnaround solutions, it then makes it completely horrific. Okay? Now, as this board, ever since we've been involved, the 4 years we've been involved, all we've done is clean up. Okay, I think that needs to be understood. It's clean up legacy issues, deal with issues relating to the expanded role, deal with issues of fraud that was there. Yes, there was fraud. We found it. We are the ones who said we want it investigated. It was investigated. We went through the processes. We enjoined our colleagues at the Department of Labor. We wrote to our colleagues at the UIF to say, together, let's do this. But I think the point we want to make, though, Chair, is that when there is alleged maladministration, perceived maladministration, or even real maladministration, but we've all ring-fenced it, we've all looked at it, we've all said, there's the beast, we're fixing it, we cannot stop funding an entity as important as Productivity SA. It's criminal. It's criminal to do that to our people. We're failing the people we profess to present. We are failing South Africa, and we have failed South Africa properly, all of us. And we can't continue to do this. We just can't. If I tell you the trauma that this board has gone through, some of them, I think, actually are suckers for punishment. I'm not even sure why they've stuck out. Because all we've done is fight, 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 but fighting with friends, not fighting with people who are the enemy. You're not fighting with people who should not be working with you. You're fighting with people who should understand what it is you want to be done. You're fighting with people who've asked you. I was asked as chair to chair Productivity SA. But you find yourself fighting with the very masters that have asked you to do it, to say, come on, we can't, it's not tomorrow, it's still another day. We need to do it now. So we failed people because we haven't done that. And so it has also, of course, been exacerbated by effect by our own success. The program, the Workplace Challenge, the one that is the center of attraction in the Productivity Awards, has been running for 20 years, Chair. It's the most successful program South Africa has. That's what you saw with people, cooperatives, small business, big business, whatever. That's what the awards are about. But what actually exacerbated because of our own success is that since its inception, it's been funded for 9.23 million. It's never been increased. So over the years, there's no inflation, there's no nothing. It's the same amount. And you will see when the CFO gets to the numbers at the end that we've said at a minimum we should be sitting at least at 22 million for that program, at a minimum, preferably much more. But we understand that resources are tight, everybody is struggling, so we don't want to be, you know, to go overboard. But at a minimum, it should at least be 22 million for us to do a decent job per year in successfully rolling out that program. The other matter that's now going to exacerbate it even more is we've received notice. We knew, of course, that there were challenges, that there were changes that were going to be made at a workshop we went to in the last few months. But, you know, you do think, though, that when decisions are made, we're also going to apply our mind to say, where do we have the cuts? You can't have cuts because there must be a cut, therefore you just cut. What if you're cutting a bone? What if you're cutting a nerve? Which I think we are. So we've received notification that there will be a budgetary cut of 1.5% to our budget. And already we have these problems that we have. We can't afford to have any cuts. We need much more money. So as much as there should be cuts, I'm sure, somewhere within the department, and there's many places we can all think of, I think, where there can be cuts, this is not the place to cut. This is cutting in the wrong place. By the Department of Labor. So we received notice from the department that we will have a 1.5% cut to our allocation from the department. Now, Chair, here's the elephant in the room that we have to all deal with. Every year, our department returns about 200 million to Treasury. Every year. No exception. So if you look throughout the years, you're going to see it happens. You can bet on it. You will win. How can that be? How can monies be returned to Treasury when important entities have to function? That makes no sense to us. We struggle with that. The next slide, slide 13 and 14, you will see deal with productivity-related research program and productivity organizational solutions program. Again, that's very self-explanatory. It's just to share with you what it is that we do. But when you get to the slides on finance, you'll see that we are suggesting that we need much more for those programs for us to be able to do justice. The next slide, slide 15, is the very well-known turnaround solutions program that has given us huge problems. Then 16 is the workplace challenge program. At 17, we have the financial structure and projections. And at this stage, Chair, I'm going to hand over to the CFO to take us through what it is we propose. But what I don't want us to be lost, Chair, as we get the numbers, because you might say, okay, what do you want, really? What are you asking for? What we are asking for over and above ensuring that Productivity SA is given its recognition within the environment of government, because we want business to take productivity seriously, but the people who set us up do not demonstrate the seriousness. I also, I think out of fairness, must mention two other things that have happened. We've had a meeting with the UIF board, a very useful meeting that happened a few months ago, you know, to exchange ideas and talk and see how we can move forward. We've just agreed, I think, 2 days ago to have a follow-up meeting on the 6th of March at our offices. So we are talking, Chair. It took us a while, though, to talk. It took us too long to talk, you know, but we're talking, so that's a good sign. The CEO had a very good meeting with the DG on the 6th of February. We're starting to think there's something to the 6th. 6th of February? Well, good means good things were said. It means good promises were made. So now we wait for the implementation of those good promises. That has not happened yet. But I'm giving this as an indication of progress. Progress must always be celebrated, Chair. But it takes too long. We take too long as a country to do things. We cannot, as people who are walking into the future of work, having walked into it. I mean, I was a commissioner, Chair, you may or may not be aware, in the ILO Global Commission on the Future of Work, that resulted in the report that's been relaunched on Friday. And one of the things that's very clear is that governments cannot continuously sit, like what my professor used to say when I did law. They used to say, the law is an ass. You can't have that anymore, a donkey. You can't have the law operating like a donkey anymore. There needs to be very proactive, swift, quick ways of doing things, and implementation must follow as soon as it happens. And we are failing as a country to do that. We have conversations upon conversations upon conversations, and then nada. We can't do that. The people on the ground are suffering. The people that we claim to represent, depending on what platform we get onto. I think we need to practice what we preach, Chair. So what we are asking you for, Chair, as the CFO is going to give you the financial side, is that our funding should not be and should never be again, whoever takes over from us, because our term ends in November this year as a board. So whoever comes in, we would like that at least they come in to do the work and not do what we did. Well, neither would we. But you are here now, Chair. That's why we are here today, because we would like this agency to be planted now, so that when another board comes, they can do what we should have been doing, strategic thinking, you know, giving good advice, implementing things, and making things happen, making South Africa proud, making our people employed, creating jobs, keeping them in jobs. And the responsible thing for people to do, as somebody who's built businesses and left them for other people to run, is that it must exist beyond you. It can't die when you leave. It means you've done a bad job. So for us, the one thing we would ask of you is to make sure that at least let not our hardship as a board not be a benefit to the ones who follow us. And the way you could do that is to make sure that we don't have this conversation about UIF didn't pay or UIF will pay. It's unfair to do that. It's not about the UIF. It's about the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor must fund. the Department of Labor must fund. How it funds, we don't want to know. Don't tell us who. We just want to see the money in the bank. That's all. So we can do the stuff we need to do. Because now we waste too much time in saying, no, I asked this one and this one, go talk to that one. And then you end up finding yourself actually for a long time that, no, man, we're chasing the wrong people. You know, for a long time we're chasing UIF. And then we thought, no, this is not right. We are also confused. We should be chasing the department to pay chair. The department must pay all the time and not take us to the commissioner's advisory board, and we sit with them and they advise. Then it goes back to the DG to think about, and then everybody thinks no. And the way to do that, Chair, is to have full funding from Parliament via appropriation. Full funding from Parliament via appropriation. And with that, Chair, I ask the CFO to give you the numbers.
Now, before you go there, you see, it is very important, like at the beginning, to say what is there that informed Productivity SA to expect funding from UIF or from any other entity or body or any corporate, whatever. What informed it? What happened that you found yourself now having to expect funding from UIF, and what has changed? Then now, so that we understand your last sentence, which I wanted to ask, of course, but you have read my mind, because I was just about to ask you is the whole presentation and the rest, what you want to tell us as the last sentence, so that you are able to link this thing towards that thing. But now you have actually said that you don't want to entertain everybody else, you want to entertain the department in terms of funding only. That I will understand. But what has happened that you found yourself having to look at certain doors other than the Department of Labor? What made you to? So that we understand why your confusion, why it is necessary then to have a revolution in the funding model.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, Chair, I'm going to ask the CEO to respond.
Thank you, Chair. The history of Productivity SA has always been that it was a Schedule 21 company when it was NPI. Now, in 2008, when it was changed into a Schedule 3A, these issues about its funding were not fully addressed. And I'll give you two critical examples. When we had the financial crisis in 1998, then there was a neglect decision to establish a turnaround program in order to save jobs. At that point, there was still the skills development funding in the Department of Labor. So then it was at that point that there was agreement that funding for the turnaround solutions program will come from the skills development fund. Then there was also a decision on the improvement of competitiveness of enterprises, and that's where you have the workplace challenge program. Then the decision at that point, from a NEDLAC point of view, was that the program will be funded through the DTI. So you then have three funding sources: a portion appropriated by Parliament through the budget vote of the department, a portion coming from the DTI, And this has run over a period of 20 years. And then a portion at that point coming from the Skills Development Fund. Now, when the Skills Development Fund was moved to the Department of Higher Education, then there was a gap. And that's when the issue of funding from the URF came to the picture. Now, in 2014, during the discussions on the Employment Services Act, that's when these two functions were then codified in law to say productivity SA will do the following. It is at that point that this that we're bringing to the committee should have happened, that you should not have funding coming from different sources, but it should be one source. Now, we have been going on with this, and I think that's the reason why the board says we've been talking about this thing too long over the past period of their term, to the extent that we're finding ourselves in this situation. The portion of funding, because of that discussion, not like 20 years ago, comes from one source, another one from another source, but it's unsustainable. That's what we've experienced so far, that this model is unsustainable, and that is why the board is submitting, making a submission that funding should be from one source, and that should be through an appropriation. Thank you, Chair.
No, it is fine. I'm sure we know the history now. I just wanted us to get the history of what happened. Honorable Bahrain, I can see that now you're getting
at the last, I think it was at our last meeting, the Director Generals said that the funding came via UIF because they had promised to help UIF for one term only. It was only on one occasion. And that they stand alone now, they don't rely on the UIF. I don't know if that's actually in the minutes, I don't think it is, but that's what the Director General said last time. Sorry about that.
Okay, I think we'll just get it through the discussion. So also I thought that I had some other different things that the UIF had interest in the work of productivity SA in one way or another, and then that's why they also brought in the front leg into productivity SA. And it was actually an objective-oriented funding or something, or interest oriented funding from the UIF when they came in. And that's why then it was a bit of a problem that you can't be certain with the funding of productivity SA if this comes when somebody else has got a particular interest. If that interest disappears, then it runs away with a bag of money. And then there's no way that that can happen. That's why then we started having all these other questions arising. And yeah, did you want to make some further inputs before you get the money manager to speak?
I just wanted to say, Chair, that these points that you are making and what we are saying are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of something very interesting that I learned in business. In business, it's so easy to form things together and come up with a group of companies, and you put them together, and it's so easy to justify it when everybody wants to justify it. And as soon as something doesn't work well in the group, then you find, especially with listed companies, then somebody says, this is not the main core of what this business was founded for. Is just an ancillary part, you know, and then people unbundle, and then they sell pieces of a business and what have you. And you find this all the time. So when this unfortunate situation happened of the skills fund being moved to another department, because that in itself was unfortunate, the UIF certainly has a benefit it derives from a program of this nature. I don't think we should be lost to that. And the benefit it derives is that the UIF's model is that of looking after unemployed people. And so, because it looks after unemployed people, it has to also get its funding from somewhere. Otherwise, it also has a model that becomes problematic, that becomes unsustainable itself. Because the more unemployment goes up, like to 27 where we are now, and let's say it was 23 a few years ago, that 4% has to come from somewhere. But where does it come from when all these people are unemployed? So it should come from a business activity, from enterprises being successful, not closing and retrenching people, because then the money flows and UIF is cash flush. Then it takes some money here, it takes some money there. You know. So it made sense, still does make sense, especially now. However, we think it's flawed to say if and when there's a challenge at UIF of whatever nature, that we must be chasing the UIF. Because actually, that's not where our mandate is derived. Our mandate is to be funded by the department. That's how, when the Employment Services Act was created, was that we must be funded for these specific activities that my CEO was talking about. You know, we must do certain things. And I just wanted to augment that information, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to honourable members. So basically, I'm just going to take you through slide number 19. Basically, what we have here are financial projections of the entity split per program. Now, the one thing that I want to highlight on this slide is if you look at the first program, administration, for the projections of 2019-20, we have 50 million. Now, if you look at that and the one sub-program below that, which is productivity org solution, which is 12 million. In terms of the appropriation from Parliament, those two programs are funded by the department or from appropriation. Now, the funding that has been confirmed for this financial year, 1920, is 56 from the department. Now, before we even start the year, we have 56 available in the kitty, yet the projections are 50 plus a 12. So immediately, before we start, we are in a deficit. Now, the point I'm raising this and I'm starting on this point is that it explains exactly why, year in, year out, we go back to the department for a deficit. So it has got nothing to do with operational inefficiencies. It's a failed program from the word go. The reason why the chairperson ended by saying we request the committee to assist in ensuring that we get all our appropriation from Parliament is for the mere fact that the funding as it stands currently is not sufficient to cover just our administration. The other two programs, which is the workplace challenge and turnarounds, are funded externally. The one is funded by the DTI, which is 22 million. And I must emphasize, this is the base case, as the chairperson alluded earlier on. Currently, what we receive from the DTI is 9 million. Again, before we even start operating, 9 is what we get. 22 is the minimum operational expenditure to run the program. So again, before we start, we're on a deficit. Nothing to do with operational inefficiencies. The program is not fully funded. Now, the last one at the bottom is the turnaround solutions, Jefferson. That program is funded by the UIF. Now, you can see the impact. The projections is 132. This financial year, the current financial year, 18-19, nothing at all came from the UIF. So the program was not funded at all. So the operational challenge that comes about as a result of that is we do have employees, or should I say fixed costs, relating to that problem, that in one way or the other have to be met. Whether UIF eventually funds or they don't, we sit with employees that need to be paid, we sit with office space that needs to be paid for, and other operational expenditure. So we have prepared here the projections for the next 3 years. These numbers were calculated and they were lodged with the department last year already, as well as the Treasury. In the next 3 years, we're looking for overall amount, 229, 238, and 261. And this is the best case, not even addressing what is on our business model. It talks about the footprint. You will see when we do our performance presentation in terms of provincial coverage, we mainly are visible in the main metros, like your Gauteng, your Mount provinces, your Gauteng, your Western Cape and Durban. But when you come to the smaller, like the Northern Capes, we don't have visibility on those areas. And the problem basically comes back to the funding issue. So this is a base case based on the as-is configuration of the entity, not even the proposed as per our business model. If I move to the next slide, this is the same slide, however, just projected differently by classification. In terms of the compensation of employees, now this number 73 assumes that we are fully funded, so we've grouped all employees irrespective of the program. So compensation is sitting at 73. This is for the number of 107 employees, this complement. Yes. Yes. So for basically 73 is the actual fixed cost for employees. And then I can remind the committee that the department funds only 56. Yes. We do have confirmation of the appropriation letter. It is 56 for 1920. So we can see here, by the time this time next year, we'll be going back to the department for a bailout again. Because 56 out of 73 is just not going to add up. So our proposal, basically our projection in the next 3 years, is that we get funding to the value of 229 for the 1920, 234 for 2021, and 264 for in the 3rd year, which is 2021-22. Thank you, Chairperson.
But in the state organs, what is supposed to be an acceptable ratio of the compensation of employees in relation to the total entity budget, more or less?
That number is normally driven by the sector, than a generic. However, currently in government, we're sitting at about, I think it's 45. 45, I think the little bit is 45% in government. But in the business, it's normally driven by the sector. Because some sectors are capital-based, of which we have lesser compensation. Some which is consulting like us. We are a knowledge-based organization. So our machinists are people. So it's not machines. So ours is to be a different setup. So ours will be higher because we work with people.
Okay, proceed, Chairman. If you are done, then you indicate as such.
Chair, it's just to reiterate the point that my CFO has just made, that, you know, it's sector-driven, that because we're a knowledge center and we have intellectual capital, we, the people in the organization, are the most expensive asset in an environment like that. That's how it works. It's always understood that that's how it works, you know. And in my experience, Chair, in the skills environment, having built companies that I built myself, you know, you always know that the people you use for skills transfer, for consulting, that is your most expensive asset. It's important that that is appreciated. And Chair, the last slide really is number 21. And it repeats what I've already said, so I'm not going to say it again. You know, in terms of what we are asking you to do, that slide, together with slide 11, because I said slide 11 was the most important. Slide 11, slide 10 talks about, you know, as we've said, the job summit. So maybe slide 10, 11, and slide 21 for us are the most important slides. And with that, Chair, we would like to thank you, unless my colleagues feel there's something I may have omitted or forgotten. I'm just checking. It looks like everybody is okay, Chair. So thank you very much.
In a minute or so, a minute or a minute and a half, I wouldn't have a problem even if you go to 2 minutes. Schedule 3A public entity. Can you just simply explain it a little bit deeper, what it means, why is it different from any other public entities, and is the conditions that makes you a Schedule 3A being met or not met, whatever.
The CEO and the CFO will decide who takes this one, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. We tried to explain that in short on the very slide 21. All it does in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, one is it is established for a specific responsibility, which is that of fulfilling a socio-economic responsibility. To the extent that, therefore, it is not a profit-making enterprise. And that has been confirmed in terms of Section 31 of the Employment Services Act. And we have covered the functions that we're saying are being delivered by this entity. We're giving them on slide seven. Now, given that mandate of delivering on employment growth, job preservation, as well as providing information to the country on productivity-related information, the expectation is you cannot be expected to go and generate any revenue anywhere. Therefore, this should be funded through an appropriation. That's at the heart of a Schedule 3A public entity.
So you are a component of the Department of Labor. You are not an independent entity. You are part of the Department of Labor. Is that my understanding?
No. We are an independent entity created out of the Department of Labor. It's difficult to ignore because we're established via an act that has been moved by the Department of Labor, but we are independent in that we have a board that is completely independent, that operates independently with fiduciary duty to the organization. And our CEO is an accounting officer in his own right. So when he sits, for instance, with the DG, it's accounting officer to accounting officer.
Who appoints the board?
Who appoints the board?
Or identify and appoint the board.
Well, the minister appoints the chair, and then how do we do it? The NEDLAC appoints the others. How does it work, by the way? Chair, if we were to talk to Section 35 of the Employment Services Act, the board is an accounting authority and the minister is the executive authority. Therefore, the minister appoints the board, although directly appoints the chairperson, and then the other six members are appointed through the NEDLAC process as constituencies. But it's important that if you look at Section 31 of the Act, the Employment Services Act, it clarifies that the entity is a juristic person. So, and that's where, and then you link it to the responsibilities of the board in terms of the, I think it's around Section 50 of the PFMA. It then begins to clarify
the legal standing of the board and what this entity should be doing. Thank you.
Okay. So is that when you expect funding from the department directly, not from anywhere else, are you saying that the minister is a shareholder to these entities or the sole shareholder? Aha. Okay. Honorable members, there is the presentation, and Productivity SA has gone through a very difficult history, and the funding windows that they used have changed geographical positions, and some of them got lost, and they ended up not being funded, and other good Samaritans came in, and then it looks like they are getting tired as well. And then they just don't want to open their purse, and then they just close it, and the baby then starving. And but generally my view is one. Who has the responsibility of sustaining jobs? Who has the responsibility of creating jobs? And when you look at Productivity SA, or you look at the Department of Labor, who must worry about the delivery of this service? Not talking about the mechanisms and the models of delivering it, but just simply this particular aspect of delivering that specific service. And then that is the person that needs to worry that that service is rendered and is continued, irrespective of the models, the manner in which it is delivered. And we are now having this particular crisis at the moment that we're sitting in front. That a specific program in Productivity SA has been suspended because of non-funding. But then this non-funding is happening because of those that have got interest of delivering that service are the ones that are not funding for it to be delivered, actually negating their own objective. Can we talk, honorable members, honorable Bakre, and then followed by honorable Dongwana, then followed by honorable Teko, then the last one, then now is honorable America will come in, and honorable Van Schalkwyk will close. In that order, Kanfuat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's really, you're telling us a story of woe, and it's really disheartening for us sitting over here in that we don't have a full picture of what's going on. To start at the end, from what I understand is every entity within the Department of Labor tells us that they've got a certain expectation of job creation and sustainability, etc. We hear that from UIF, we hear it from CCMA, we hear it from just about every entity. But of course your core business, from what I understand, is sustainability, job creation, job retention, and of course productivity. That's your core business. And so maybe, I don't know, obviously we need to call on the Director General at the end of the day to put together a proper plan to fit everyone else's ideas behind what your core business is, because everyone is trying it. UIF have spent a lot of money on job retention, job creation, productivity themselves. So I don't really understand where the actual responsibilities fall and why does it slip between the cracks. So that's the first question I've got for you, is have you ever approached the director and said, we need to actually sort this out, we need to get everyone around the table, because this is not the responsibility of this committee sitting here to try and sort your internal problems out. The second thing is, You are created by an act of parliament. You are a standalone organization, and I'm not sure, and I don't understand, but maybe my brain is too small, as to why you have to get your funding through the Department of Labor unless someone has made that decision. Maybe the Minister of Labor has made that decision that it has to be funded directly through the Department of Labor, and that when the Department of Labor applies to the fiscus for funding, that they ticket you as one of the parties that has to get funding. So I'm not sure why it's functioned through the, you have to rely on the UIF. From my understanding is that happened once for a specific reason. The UIF needed you to step in and to do some training and whatever. So that's the next thing. I'm not sure why, and maybe our chair could put me in the picture better, but I just don't understand it. I've been trying to work it out, how that actually came about, that you get your funding first of all through the department, and then why does the department look at you as being the very poor stepchild of that. So that's the second problem. The third problem I've got is that we all know, and you've just said that, sir, that productivity in South Africa is pretty low. We're really low down the scale, and we can't afford that. So in fact, your function is vital to our economy. You could be the lifeblood of our economy. The only interaction I've ever had on the ground with productivity is when I've been to big firms where they've got a possible problem, where they've had to look at mass retrenchments, where you have stood in. But from my understanding is job creation comes through small business. And maybe we should be concentrating more on presenting training to small businesses, seminars for small business, that sort of thing. And especially small businesses from the previously disadvantaged areas. Because they're the ones that need vital skills. And you are well placed to provide it. You could be the cornerstone of our economy going forward. I mean, we just have to look at Mauritius as to how they've moved very strongly in creating very vibrant small business activity and an environment which is fantastic. And they have something similar, I don't know what they call it in Mauritius, something similar to productivity in South Africa, but I'm sure you know, you've probably done all that research as well. So on that level, I think there's a very good argument as to not only should you be a standalone organization, but you should get your own budget. And I think that's what you're really telling us at the end of the day. We should have a budget that is earmarked for us. Even if it comes through the Minister of Labour, then she would say, productivity gets X. She might not give you what you want, but at least you know where you stand so you can plan into the future. And those are my few comments on that. I think Productivity SA is vital to the ongoing business environment of this country and job creation. I strongly believe that we've got 10 million unemployed in this country today. I know the Director General said 9.7, but Cassart is telling us it's higher than that. If that's the case, then gee whiz, you've got a lot of weight on your shoulders. And hopefully, if anything, that's your mandate. Your mandate is to somehow make sure that small business creates more jobs. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And do you have thought line up on that upper table?
Thanks, Chair. I think Honorable Bahrain touches on the most of the information. The board is saying to us through the chairperson that they have a crisis. And for the past 20 years, they've been trying to make sure that the entity is functional, but the funding model, which is, they are not even sure when they budget how to implement their projects and how to assist left and right. But the issue here, last time, I think I remember there was one meeting when we said the TG must make sure with the commissioner is here, the UIF, in dealing with the issue of transferring of that fund. I don't think today we will be sitting here still, we're getting a report that the money still is delayed. because we were told that that matter has been finalized. There were a series through the CEO reported to us that they've got a meeting that they're going to finalize on this matter. Things are good. I think after Christmas, things are bad again. Nothing has changed. The status remains the same. However, because there will be, the little that they were supposed to get from the UNF, maybe you will be trying to resolve some of the challenges that the board is facing currently. But however, Chair, the successes that they are recording, they've recorded and they have presented to us now, they're indicating that the impact is not that much, but they're doing something. There's a year, 2016, 2017, I think on the other slide, I don't remember which one, but there's a recording of zero where the 2018, they didn't do anything at all. I don't know that slide, and I want to check on that one. What is it? What happened on that year? And what was the cause of them not doing anything that year where it says zero, we haven't done anything on this part? So I think the chair has to explain something on that. The issue of bailout, the minister, when he was tabling the budget on that day, he said, do we need these entities? That was the question. And now we need to come up with a model of integrating some of the entities, but I'm not saying here, but this one is an act that established the board, and they are recommending as a board to say we need to be funded directly, not to become, as Honorable Bakhen is saying, a stepchild of a stepchild of a stepfather. So there becomes a confusion, because so you don't even know whether it's your brother, it's your cousin, or who, or you get married to who, is it your relative or not, because there's confusion. No one knows his position, how to talk to who and when and how, because the funding is coming from different entities. How do you budget? If someone brings the money after 6 months, someone decides after a year, someone decides, okay, return this month, financial year now it has ended, maybe even the financial year ending of this, and people who are funding them are not the same. So I think on our legacy report, Chair, maybe that's when we're going to put to say, this is what we have discovered from the entity. This is what we are recommending, that the entity be prioritized by the six administration, meaning the first thing that they need to deal with when they come back is Productivity SA. We can't be unbundling, and we are doing everything in the country, but the entity that must play its role. Now it says we can't play our role because of 1, 2, 3. We need to come to an end on the blaming part, where the entity should come and account, instead of coming to tell us to say you want us to work, but you're not giving us money to work to do our part. Because now there's a slide, like 11. Parliament expanded the mandate, but there's no funding. You expand the mandate, you don't give something. But I don't know how true it is. We need our department to investigate on the matter, because we can't say what they're presenting to us is true. It might happen. It's because they're here. So we need to task the DG and to ask him to make sure that everything that the Productivity SA is saying to us is true. Maybe we'll get a summary of a report on one of the meetings that we're going to have next before we rise. Then the issue of UIF, the commissioner must give us an answer here on exactly where is the problem lies. Why are they not transferring? Because now the system itself the minister must change it on who to fund, and they must maybe recommend, I don't know, those processes of PMFA. But the PMFA is straightforward. It will tell you this money, you do this and this and this and how. There's no confusion on the PMFA on how to apply and how to spend budget, which were allocated to you. So, Chair, the skills also, they are saying the skills have been transferred to the Department of Education. And who was responsible before and after? What was the change? When you shift something, you take it to something else. If you are a productivity SA, it means you go with those. I don't know how should I explain it. But the minute they transfer that thing to the education, when they cut off of that processes, they will say, you know, you're no longer relevant. Now we'll get our own productivity SA to deal with this net. Then that gap that was created there. So there's a lot of things, Chair. That's why I'm saying we can safely say we know the problem. The challenges have been reported. Lots of challenges instead of the good part. It's not a good story to tell. You can't campaign telling people productivity is failing. Vote for us. But we know there's one entity is not doing its part, and it's saying Parliament, we are not appropriating the correct budget. We need something maybe to tell them, as give us their successes. Since their term of office, they came into the office, this is what they've tried themselves without the complaints and the challenges. What is it that they've played as a role? What is the general, the strategy that they've put in place themselves to see South Africa will move forward? Because as much as we have problems in the house, but we eat every day. It doesn't matter how you eat, but porridge is there. What is it that you mix your porridge with? It doesn't matter, but you must eat, they must have energy. But we need to check the entity itself. When they go and say we're meeting, we are planning, what is it they're planning for the South Africa? Is going around the country, or the trip, or what? But how is this entity relevant to the current state where we are as a South Africa? So, Chair, a lot has said to the chairperson to say we tried and we thank you for being open with us and be frank with us. This is the challenge we are facing. Then this is how we think you can best assist us. So it's clear there's a challenge, there's crisis. They won't say everything, I think. Maybe there are major things that we are not getting, but that's why I said the DG, he will. That's why last week I said, no, there's something wrong here. We're not getting what we're getting. So it's good that the chairperson today, there was this presentation that we were able to get the gist of saying what is the core problem of productivity SA? Why are they where they are? Because according to them, it's because of us. Ourselves were saying they're not working. So it's a blame game now. So Chair, with those words, I think maybe if something comes out and the issue of policy uncertainty are here, that it's a problem also. So there's a lot of, they've suspended the turnaround strategy. How do you suspend based on what? Is it because of the budget or what? So we need to get a lot of things to say, this is what we've done, this is the intervention we are requested from you to do. But they have told us, Bahrain put it clearly to say, this is the crisis, unemployment is rising. And we'll have a serious challenge. If it goes to data, I don't know what is it that we're going to do. So, Chair, maybe the chairperson will come up with something. Chairman of the board, maybe you'll be able to promise something good. I don't know. The stress that you've told me, I need some antidepressant to take it down so that I'm positive about the entity. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Don't go.
Mine is a very short question. In his presentation, the chairperson of the board mentioned fraud or corruption that they found in the entity. Now, what I'd like to find out is if the cases are investigated and as to just how many of the cases that were reported are fully resolved. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My colleague has articulated that position quite clearly. Thank you.
Honorable Pascal, please.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Just before you continue, Honorable Farai and Jogo, if you've got some thoughts lined up to get some clarity and explanations, please just prepare and indicate when Honorable Pascal will complete.
Thank you, Chair. I want to welcome the presentation that has been made, even though it's not very positive. And Chair, a lot of concerns has been raised by the previous members, so I won't re-emphasize what they said. It's safe to say, Chairperson, we are experiencing, or we've been experiencing, challenges in terms of this entity for quite some time, and various proposals has been made to the point that we've indicated as the portfolio committee that it's clear that the transfers that are being made to the entity is not sufficient in ensuring their effective operation. So we've requested this entity, Jefferson, to go back to the drawing board and formulate a turnaround strategy, say, like that, and show us or make proposals on how they plan to expand their income that can assist the transfers. Look at other avenues in terms of fundraising to ensure financial sustainability of this entity. And unless I was not present at that time when those proposals were made, I can't find them, Chairperson, and that is a point of concern. Because as we clearly saw during the budget presentation, that things are going to get tougher because our economy is not yielding the expected results as we thought. And if we are saying that we want to emphasize that there needs to be more money pumped into this entity and there's no other avenues that they are considering except from transfers to beef up their income, it's a point of concern to me. Then, Chairperson, it's clear to me, it's a pity that the DG is not here today because we don't want a situation where it's I say, they say, and it's a blame game that's been played. So in the absence of the department being present to represent themselves, it's a problem for me to engage in terms of the allegations that have been made towards the department. We've seen, Chair, of we've been presented in previous, I think it was two quarters back, during the quarterly presentations, we've heard that there's this issue that the Chair raised about the maladministration and stuff like that. So I want to echo what Honorable Tongwane said, but I want to further it to say, to ask, if you found that there is indeed
misappropriation or fraud or corruption and things, what are your measures that you've put in place to ensure proper consequence management, and if the need be, to make sure that you get that money back, if it's indeed employees that were found guilty or that's in the process of being charged in terms of maladministration. Then, Chairperson, we've had a... Let me not go into that one. I want to hear from the UIF Commissioner. In terms, we've noted that previously they said they've stopped the transfers until the entity can give a proper account on what they've done with the money. And when we talk about sound financial practices, it's only fair, Chair, that you have to produce evidence of what you've done with the money before you can get another transfer. And in this process, we don't want this entity to close down because we realize that they are very important, taking into consideration what their mandate is saying and what we need in terms of our economic circumstances. And when we look at the continuous poor performance, just going poorer from quarter 1, 34% to quarter 2, 32%, and we don't know what quarter 3 would look like. And when we are sitting here, it's a blame game and it's complaints and it's complaints. Is there any way that we can rise above the challenges and try and ensure that this entity, in all fairness, will be able to bounce back? And what do you propose? Without, we know it's money is the key thing, but do you have any other interventions that you've looked into without looking at the department or without looking into to UIF, without looking to trade and industry in terms of ensuring self-sustainability or financial sustainability? Because at the end, the buck stops with you, but we have to take joint responsibility. And Chairperson, there's been some statements that have been made by the Chairperson, and I would really like to caution us not to play the blame game all the time. I'll refer to the statement that has been made that we were never involved in terms of the national minimum wage discussions. And I would really like to propose to entities, especially when you look in terms of government entities, when you look at entities and you look at the department, you look at things that's going to happen within your department, within your environment, to be proactive. There's nothing stopping any entity to make proposals without being requested. That's why we ask for public comment. So when you are in-house, we expect you to be proactive in the process. There's various statements that have been made, and I would really urge ourselves to refrain from dealing with things. And if there's really a communication breakdown,
They should be honest and upfront with us as the portfolio committee so that we'll be able to make a recommendation in our legacy report, because if the channels were open in terms of communication between the different parties within the entity, the department, and those departments that are expected to give transfers, we wouldn't have sat with this problem. So I would really like to urge the chairperson and leadership, the board, to reopen the channels of communication. And if the need arises that there's really a breakdown of communication, they should refer that matter urgently to the incoming Parliamentary Portfolio Committee to deal with that matter as they start. So I would also like to request our Portfolio Committee Secretary to include that as a recommendation in our revised legacy report, so that the incoming committee should zoom into that issue, because we can't have officials not talking to each other or others being frustrated because of whatever reason. It can't be, because we are government, and the aims and objectives of this ANC-led government needs to be filtered down to the people on the ground level. And if things like the turnaround solutions are suspended, initiatives like that are suspended, it's a point of concern, because it's speaking to the core, and that things, Chair, should really be addressed as soon as possible. But I would also like to stop, Chair, by saying that we appreciate that the Productivity SA, they came with a board and they took us into confidence as the Portfolio Committee to say, but this is what's happening. It's not only white and black, but this is what's happening. It's a pity that we are at the end of our term. It's only 2 weeks left, and we would have loved to do more. But we can try and maneuver something outside this meeting to engage with the department, to engage with the DA, to try and fast-track service delivery in terms of this entity. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kharaya, you are right. Honorable Njobo, you are okay. Thank you very much. The Schedule 3A, they are defined as entities that are normally extensions of a public entity, with the mandate to fulfill a specific economic or social responsibility of government. As such, such entities have the least autonomy. As such, such entities have the least autonomy. Not like the Chapter 9 institutions and I think the Schedule B should be talking to the business entities, state-owned entities of them that we have, that have reasonable autonomy and to a certain extent independence. But then Schedule 3A, my understanding is that you are a government component of the department. Hence, when you are hungry, the department should be worried. They cannot say go out and go and have bonds and raise funds outside and deal with shareholdings and all those. No, they can't say that. like what happens in Denel and all other state-owned entities. Therefore, because you are established to actually fulfill a specific economic or social mandate, then it still remains the department's responsibility to deliver the service that you are instructed to deliver. Still the department's responsibility. Hence my understanding that if the department doesn't fund you, it is actually stopping you from delivering the service that it was supposed to deliver. It's actually saying we are not delivering this service as a department. I think that is my understanding. But then also is a little analysis. I think I engaged the commissioner of UOI and the DG is on the implications of what is happening, is that productivity SA, you are expected to save jobs so that you don't have many people that goes and queue in the office of UI. The more jobs you save, the less the number of people that queue at the other side. Therefore, it is in the interest of UI to fund you, to save more jobs. And then, if they don't fund you, then they say, no, 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 allow people to come to our offices, to come and queue. That's what the UI is saying, if it doesn't fund you, if it has got interest in that. Then, I think these are some of the implications that we just need to really talk to. Yes, there is this particular aspect as well which we cannot celebrate, that if Productivity SA then involves itself in financial mismanagement and corruption and fraud and whatever it can be called in terms of the investigations, we can't celebrate that. And because when you do that, you are actually punching holes at the bottom of your pocket, and you expect people to throw things when they just go through to the ground and the pocket never gets filled. Then that, I think, the call needs to be made that we need to sort out that particular aspect, that mismanagement of funds must come to an end if ever it is happening. And but solving up that mismanagement of funds, whatever, it should not result in the Productivity SA then not being funded, because that is actually shooting your own leg. Must find a way of resolving the problems of mismanagement of funds on one side, but on one side as well making sure that the services that it's supposed to deliver can deliver. Otherwise then you have got a double tragedy. Money is lost this side, services are not delivered this side, then that's double tragedy. And hence that's why I've indicated that one has actually raised this specific matter. So it's in pursuit of getting financial discipline in Productivity SA. If UI then becomes stingy with the money, then they will save some bucks, because then the money will not go into a bottomless pocket. It will save that money. But I don't know is for how long will that money be saved, because that amount that they save, then they're going to actually dish out the other side on the people that are queuing at the door as well. You know, it's just simply, it's just a shift of the expenditure line. It's a productivity SA expenditure line or reinvestments, that side of the people's unemployed benefits. And it's just a shift of the expenditure line that would amount to. So, but at the end of the day, like as I'm saying, is productivity SA does not have a responsibility of sustaining jobs. It doesn't have that. It is its function as created. It's a responsibility of the department to sustain jobs or create jobs, and then use productivity as a tool to do that. So these are some of the things that, you know, is the need to be a little bit much more clear. But then if we look at this thing as if the responsibility of productivity is to save jobs and blah, 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 then we get divorced from it. Even if when you are keeping the money, then you still expect them to do that and say that's their responsibility. Then it's a confusion of interpretation of what we're supposed to be doing. And then the other thing I think that we just need to speak to is, Chairman, is that Parliament has not given you the responsibilities and not give you money. We are a policy-making institution. And then the piece of legislation that you are established in terms of, it gets proclaimed which minister or department is responsible for that legislation. And then all the obligations of that nation then become the responsibility of that minister and the department. And so even if we may have given you some responsibilities, is that some of these responsibilities, they actually originate from the executive. They come here and make these proposals. And then we as policymakers, then when we agree or we refine them, then we promulgate it. But then it goes, when we finish and it is passed, we don't sign it. We say we are happy in Parliament. We send it to the President, who is the head of the executive. And if the President wants it to be implemented, then he signs it, assents to it. And when he assents to it, and then the relevant minister and department then takes over in the implementation of the executive as an executive authority, then we are not there. When you need money, go to that department and the DG, and then you make sure that you participate in their budgeting process. And all of us, we need to be very clear that the budgeting process does not start in February when the budget is tabled. It starts almost about 8 months before the budget is tabled. It's a progressive and process, which means is that now that the budget is out, then the next cycle of budget preparations is just about to start. Then you must make sure that all your demands and interests, and then start getting in the Department of Labor and explain yourself and make sure that understood. And also, if there is any intention from your side for the improvement on the legislation that creates you, if it has got gaps, that legislation, then you must actually sit down and look at the areas that needs to be improved on the legislation, convince the Department of Labor that this particular legislation needs to be improved, because then we are missing here. It's not clear here. And convince them. And then we'll see that particular amendment bill that coming down here in Parliament for us to actually assist you. We are a policy making. And the executive authority decision making lies with the minister and the department. I'm sure you... I would like you, of course, as well, to really explain what the Honorable Tego has raised. Also, it was my biggest challenge, is that if the skills fund had you as an expenditure window. When it is taken now to Department of Education or Higher Education, then why did the expenditure line then be left alone and then not go with or a discussion ensues that no, you are taking our funding window, but you are leaving us here in labor. What must happen? How do we continue still to get that funding to us? What has happened? Because it looks like you allowed the money back to go and then you remain, but you still want to eat. What has happened? How did that happen? And was it an accident or you engaged, you couldn't succeed, and if it did not succeed, then people should have discussed what would then be your new funder. Is it that the UI then came in and said, no, forget about that thing of the skills. If they take it, let them take. We are here. We'll deal with your challenges. If that is correct, then there must be sustainability of funding. You may respond if you are ready. And then maybe we'll start with the UI commissioner. And then ask Chelugu Zwayastinji. Proceed. And then when you are done, then the chair will follow you and the rest.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think stingy is the right description of the UI Commission. Yes. Chair, myself and Mr. Mtiba, he started in April 2016. I started in December 2016 as a commissioner. And when he started, already at that time there were issues that he had picked up around payments. There were a tussle between UIF and Productivity SA. And at that time, the two of us agreed. But he approached UIF and said, there's a need for an investigation here on the things that they've picked up. And we agreed as UIF to carry the burden of the cost of the investigation. Not because we have money, Chair. I'm just also already trying to say we're not stingy. But we carry the burden of the cost because we are aware that the success of Productivity SA is for both parties. We did the first investigation, it came with findings that were shocking to both parties. And we also, in our sitting between myself and Mr. Mchiba and the DG, also were of the view that there could be further issues beyond what was happening within Productivity SA to the suppliers that were involved, and we went deeper into the investigation just to pick up the issues. And some of the issues that we picked up were internal issues at Productivity SA that Mr. Mtiba, in his very few months as he started disciplinary processes. I think he'll actually maybe give more details. There were a couple of people that were disciplined. Some of them were dismissed. Some of them at the brink of being disciplined, jumped ship and left. So already, I think he lost about half of his executive team due to that investigation that we both undertook. The other part, we've reported the case to the South African police to investigate any further possible criminal activities. We've reported that to the police, but the police, of course, have got a number of issues on the table that they are investigating, but we've reported the case to the police. Between then and now, Chairperson, we did ring fence. We met myself, Mchiba, and the DG. We said, let's ring fence investigation and let's transfer funds to Productivity SA, which we did, and those funds that were transferred to Productivity SA. But of course, the investigation has its own implications, Chair, that I just want to bring up to the meeting here. Once an investigation has taken place and the investigator used words like irregular expenditure, they use words like you cannot continue to fund if there's irregular expenditure reported, if there's fraud. It already sent panic signals to the finance team within UIF. And as a result, they become very cautious how they treat any financial implications linked to UIF, to Productivity SA. And that requires that you need to regularize some of the irregular expenditures where there were fraudulent cases. They need to be sorted out first, because PFM may then pushes you to regularizing these activities before you can further incur costs on these activities. But we took a risk, myself and Mr. Mtiba, and ring-fenced that piece and paid the first tranche that allowed them to function some part of 2017. But during 2018, there was resistance from the finance team at UIF, justifiably so, because they have the view that irregular expenditure and any fraudulent activities that have been picked up, the PFM say you shouldn't continue incurring further costs. And Mr. Mtiba justifiably took a decision and his team that it doesn't make sense then for their team to continue having a turnaround solution functional if there's no funding coming their way. So it made sense for them to take that decision. I think this year we had further engagements and we discussed and we paid them, I think it's about 4.2 million if I'm not mistaken, but I don't have the exact figure. We paid them a management fee that was due to them. But once again, even that, there was a legal opinion that was sought at UIF, whether should we pay our counterpart a management fee or not. And the legal opinion was saying, no, you shouldn't pay a management fee. But I took a decision as a commissioner that I have an agreement with Productivity SA to pay a management fee, and therefore I set aside the legal opinion, because as you know, a legal opinion is a legal opinion. As the account officer, you need to apply yourself. And I applied myself and I said, we need to pay Productivity SA because we must honor the agreement we have with Productivity SA. We can discuss the legal opinion implications on further agreements after that. So at this stage where we are, Chair, we are finalizing the agreement for the new financial year. The intention is to finalize it within the next few days, because we wanted to have it done by end of February, so that at least, if possible, we can pay them the first tranche in March. That was the plan. I think that's the sense where we are. But what I just wanted to bring this point, Chair, maybe just before I step off. What Mr. Mtiba and team are asking today, Chair, is if we simplify the funding, I'll give an example. Public Employment Services does work for UIF in the labor centers. They do counseling, they do CV capturing on the system before a person applies for UIF. We don't have to set aside funds for public employment services, but we get an invoice on a monthly basis. We call it a down claim. That comes to us to say, we've done these services for you, and they claim back. Inspectorate, they do inspections on behalf of UIF. The same process follows. LPNIR, labor, I forgot the exact complete name. Labor policy and industrial relations. They do work for UIF. We don't set aside budget for them, but every month they give us an invoice, a dollar claim. I think where I'm getting to, Chair, is what Productivity SA is asking for. It's, for me, it's a simple solution. That instead of looking at UIF for funding, we need to put funds aside as a department that funds the activities of Productivity SA, such that they don't have to be tussling with UIF every now and again. Otherwise, then public employment services must do the same. CCMA, one of their main tasks that they do it for UIF, because they assist companies on the brink of closing, to an extent that they help them with training layoff schemes, which ultimately come to UIF to pay, because it's a mandatory pay too. But we don't have an agreement with CCMA to be paying them every now and again some funds for doing the work that they do. And hence the view that Mr. Mtiba and the chairperson are expressing, that if it's defrayed from the vote of the department, it simplifies the move of funds between the entities. It's already guaranteed at the beginning of the year that they are going to be doing this work, and this work is going to require so much funds. and therefore the department set it aside. How it gets deducted from URF or compensation fund is another story. Because in fact, as I'm closing, with a compensation fund, too, is supposed to fund them, URF is supposed to fund them in other way of funding, but it's defrayed from the department vote of budget. I'd like to pause at that, Chair.
No, I think it is okay. It's okay. I think it's an exercise that is, really, as far as I'm concerned, like as Honorable Bahrain has indicated, it did not need us. It needed you, Mr. Mutiba, and as well as the DG, to sort out the financing model of Productivity SA. But for some reasons known to others, you guys, you continued on a gentleman's agreement for more than 2 years or 3 years or so, you see. And then now, but like as one is saying, is that anybody that will try and analyze that kind of funding will tell you that it is not fine, it's not fine, it's not right. Because both of you are entities of the Department of Labor. You account to the Department of Labor. But one entity is expected to cry to another entity for funding. You see. So, I mean, it is just like in a very awkward family of two children. Then one child then looks at the father and asks for takis and all that. But then the other child then actually asks for takis from the brother. And then the brother is the one that must go to the father and say, hey, ubuting up and all. It can't be correct. And it's a misaligned arrangement. It is actually normal that they should expect the funding from the department, being a Department of Labor component. But then you need to engage so that your interest, remember that your interests are also need to be fulfilled. You can absolve yourself and say, no, I'm not responsible for Productivity SA. But unfortunately, that the job that they are doing, you have got interest in. Therefore, you have to participate in actually reaching a conclusion on the financing model of Productivity SA, so that your interest as well then remains covered. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you've said a lot of things that, to a large extent, I'm not sure if I should, there's some things I wanted to respond to, but you've sort of countered them, because I can see you have a good grasp of the elephant in the room. I think I want to categorically say to honourable members, there is no blame game here. I mean, these blame game words were used a few times by honourable member Van Skalvik. We don't have time for such. We don't. I don't. I can tell you as chair, I don't need to be chair of Productivity SA, actually. But I love it. I'm there for love. I'm there to serve. The things I do, my colleagues do, they do out of love. I don't get paid Productivity SA. So we have no business going around blaming anybody for anything. And actually, I think Honorable Bahrain was saying, we exhausted everything you can think of. We tried everything, every possible avenue you could think of, we did. The Productivity SA has ended up occupying far more time than it should in all our collective diaries. It's been counterproductive. Actually, as Productivity SA, we've been very unproductive in the way we've had to behave to respond and deal with each and every situation that's here. And when the Honorable Member Bahrain was also talking, you know, you're talking about the kind of training we should be doing for SMMEs, for this, for that, the slides 13, 14, 15, and 16, you'll see, actually capture what we do. So I think I'll save you going into the detail of that. I also want to talk about the maladministration and fraud that I referred to. I think it needs to be appreciated. So, as the commissioner says, the commissioner together with the CEO agreed at our initiative. We, Productivity SA, initiated that. We said, go deal with these things that we see. They kept on coming in different ways. You know, you get an email that is strange for an employee saying, blaming somebody about something, and you think, oh, how do we do this? Then eventually we said, you know what, let's just check. Let's stop saying it's an email from an anonymous person who said this and we don't know if they're trying to target something. Let's just open it up and check. And the one incident was an incident where we ended up firing a few people and placing charges and so on. And it was, you know, somebody in the department playing a game and other people were supporting it and whatever, and they got dealt with in the way they were dealing with suppliers. The huge one that happened that involved the turnaround solutions, I think it also needs to be taken in a context that says, had the funding model been correct, I'm wondering as I'm sitting here if we would have had maladministration. I want to repeat that. Had the funding model been correct from the first place, I don't know if we would have had maladministration. Okay? And that's important. It's critical to be appreciated. Because the investigation will show that no money was found to have gone to anybody's pocket. So let's clear that. There was no money that went to anybody's pocket. It was money that was moved from certain pots into other pots when it shouldn't have. So one pot had a kitty, money was taken from this kitty and put there in breach of an agreement with the UIF on how that kitty must be used. Okay, I think let's be clear on that. No money left the organization. It stayed in the organization. It just did things that were never foreseen by the people who agreed to a particular line. So I think that's important. So what I think Honorable Teko has referred to as the stepchild situation, I think, was Honorable Bahrain, and then you reinforced it. And the chair talked about the techies and everything. So I think that mentality, this is what we are saying we cannot continue to have. We just can't continue to have it. It's not sustainable. And believe us when we tell you that there's been far too much resources and time and energy invested in this, and it's clear that it's an exercise in futility. It's become a very vicious circle. And interestingly, communication has always been open. Honorable Falskalvik. Communication has always been open. There's always been a way to talk. We've always talked. I call the minister, by the way. I call him on my phone. I send the SMS, I send the WhatsApp. But somehow there was a misunderstanding or a failure to appreciate how this thing needs to work. You know, or maybe all of us are so busy, and in your busy schedule, you don't actually unpack things and say, okay, maybe what is wrong is this. And this is what I'm saying, it's taken us so long to realize that actually we're backing up the wrong tree. If you go back to why we were established, the rationale behind the establishment, the interpretation of the statute as it was done, and the thinking behind the proposition that was made to Parliament for us to exist, we are not doing it accordingly. The way it should have been done is that the department needs to allocate to us, and it must be appropriated at the beginning. Because we also want a situation where we are talking now, for instance, about money being returned to Treasury all the time, over 200 million. We also don't want to be a dumping ground, because it happens in reality when people are stuck. Now, like, they don't know where to put the money. They say, okay, take. No. We want the money at the beginning of the process, so we can also plan predictably for the people of South Africa and make sure that people from our efforts are able to benefit from the creation of jobs and the preservation of jobs that we do. And that's really what we're doing. But we're also saying we have a much bigger mandate. A bigger mandate for us is to increase South Africa from points of 51, where we are 9 points below 60 as the minimum kind of average,
we have a duty to uplift South Africa from there to something between 60 and 100. Why can't we be there as South Africans? Why is it that as South Africans, we are excellent at executing things that other people want us to do for them, like the World Cup? Why? What is it that we are able to always execute? It means we have the ability when we want to. We can do things. And I think for us as a board, we are saying we must do that. It's important. So when Honorable Member Bahrain talks about us being a, I think he said a vital, use something, a vital something, vital function, and we could be the lifeblood of our economy, nothing could be further from the truth. Because you see, these tough moments we are talking about, Honorable Member Van Stalfink, that it's going to get tougher. It is going to get tougher. But when you think about how life is supposed to work, it gets tougher because we don't make the tough decisions at the beginning. And it gets tougher, and then it gets dire, and then it gets destroyed. And the thing that we are all missing is that as tough as it might be in terms of resources, and as tough as it might be in terms of money for the country that we don't have, there are certain vital areas you must spend in to try and curb the tide. To curb the tide, there are certain things, and Productivity South Africa sits in the middle of that. If you awaken to the need for South Africa to be productive, and you awaken to the need to actually do things in a productive manner, an efficient and effective manner, then that toughness that is going to come is ameliorated. It's dealt with, it's improved. So when I said, I did not say, I want to correct also, I did not say that we were not involved. I think there was a discussion about invited or involved, the minimum wages, and that we must be proactive. I think that's also very important that we note this. What I was saying, we should not have to be pushing ourselves like people who are trying to crash the party. We shouldn't be seen as people crashing the party. We are necessary partners. When anybody initiates anything at the department, that has to do with creation of jobs, preservation of jobs, competitiveness, productivity, we should be receiving one of the first letters. We have no way of knowing what's being planned beforehand. We respond. So if a process starts and then it gets and it's 1 to 10 and we catch it at 5, it's already late because we should have been at 1. So by the time we insisted and crashed the party, it was already at 8 out of 10. So we are just saying we need to change the way that we operate so that we don't have a situation where we are stuck. So for us, and I see Honorable Member at the back, feel that I'm repeating things. I'm sorry, I'm responding to things, Honorable Member, because I see your hand signals. I'm watching you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to bore you, but I have to respond to the other Honorable Member because they asked questions, so I have to respond. Otherwise, I don't know how else, because it's disrespectful for me not to respond. And that's why I'm responding to everything as I'm asked by the Chair. So for me, Chair, I really think that we have grasped what we're asking for. What we are asking for, Chair, to reiterate, is that slide 21. We are asking for that. And we are saying there's been good conversations that have been had. I mentioned that as well. Good conversations between the CEO and the Commissioner. Good conversations that are happening that look like they're going in the right direction. But we don't want to rely purely on good conversations and the possibility of things being better after implementation. We want to have a predictable, certain environment so that we can cater for South Africa. I hope I've tried to respond and summarize it, because there were a lot of things that were said, Chair. If I've missed anything, you will guide me so that I can come back to it.
No, I think there is a clear understanding. There is a clear understanding, because I think what was important for me, let me not say for us, for me, was that history, how it came about that you have this part of a problematic funding arrangement, how it came about. And then I think we understand that, but we also understand that when that funding arrangement was made, you did not have a problem at the beginning, but then problems then arose as you moved forward. Then you started picking up challenges. That is the ones that actually led now to even certain programs now being suspended because of non-funding, and which brings us to today's meeting, that what you have been created for, you are not able to do because the resources that you require to do those things are not forthcoming, and therefore you need certainty of funding. And you believe that certainty of funding is for the department to take its rightful place and responsibility and obligation to ensure that the child that they have created is alive. Although in terms of the PFMA, we expect that you need to be disciplined when it comes to finances. We're not going to celebrate ill discipline on monies. That I think it must be very, very clear. But then what comes to be a little bit critical is the response. When you misbehave and the response, and then the response then must be tested on risk levels as well. You know, it's, there is this analogy that you can have an egg on the floor here with a golf club, and you're asked to move the egg from one point to the other with a golf club, and somebody may decide to push the egg with a golf club, and one may decide to hit it, but unfortunately if you hit it, the egg doesn't move. Doesn't move, it just crashes exactly where you hit it. It may take a little bit longer to push with the club, but at least you can get the egg to the right point. So the response to the misbehaviors on finances by your funding masters needed to be tested on the risk that the response brings. Like as I've said before, that yes, the PFMA may be requiring that if this is risking, then you can't put money in there when there is risk elements that they are misbehaving with the money. But what is the risk that comes along with that kind of a decision? The risk that comes along with that response that deals with the financial risk in the entity is that you are closing the entity. You are closing it. Why do you think that you are actually dealing with the challenges in the entity? But then you close the doors. You see. So there is a need that the entity productivity SA must clean itself from misbehaviors, and then the funding bosses, if there is anything wrong in productivity SA, intervene. Whether you intervene in even reorganizing its business, whatever, how it should do during the time of the intervention, then it's fine. I mean, if we say, no, you are naughty, we are giving you money, but this is the process now that when you want to use this money, use it in this particular fashion. We want to know when you have spent this money, or want to report every month ending how you have spent this particular month, until that particular intervention comes to its conclusion, it's fine. I mean, it's this entity, like as I've said, is, you may be thinking that you are independent and whatever, all these sorts of things, but you have got less autonomy as a Schedule 3A. You are a baby of the Department of Labor. And then they can intervene there if you misbehave and you do funny things. They cannot throttle your neck. They must actually try and guide you and say, no, 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 you don't go this way. You are misusing our funds. And then you go this way. And then this is how you do things. If the manner in which you are doing, it's not okay. So there is that intervention space that is there. You are not like Daniel or Spurnet, what is it called nowadays? Transnet, you see? Yes, because they've got some sort of freedom. If you give them money, then they do it that way, then you say, no, 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 we can't. You are not allowed to go and dictate to them how they should do it. You can't. If you just simply hold your funding or your donations to it. But with you, then it's a different case. And hence is that the department should ensure that you are alive for you to be able to deliver the service that the department is supposed to deliver. And all other things, it must be an in-house thing of actually managing how you do things, and when you are doing things dangerously, then people must advise you that no, 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 you are doing things dangerously, you are doing them wrong, change. And then we give you 2 days, 3 days, come back and tell us how you have changed. And then they agree that no, 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 this is a better way of doing things. And then you are let alone then to proceed in that route. And not to throttle your neck. It's not in the interest of the Department of Labor to switch off the windpipe. It can't be in its interest. As we have tried to analyze, it's not in the interest of your eye as well to throttle your neck. It's not. It's not in the interest of DTI to throttle your neck. Because when they throttle your neck, that service that you are delivering, which DTI has interest in, it won't be delivered when they throttle your neck. So, but like as we're saying, is that compliance as well with the PFMA in terms of financial prudency and discipline, also it must be lifted up to the high level. People must comply with all our laws and ensure that mismanagement and doesn't happen easily. And those that misbehave must be dealt with. And then I don't know whether dealing with means firing them when one of your responsibilities is to save jobs. honorable members, I think the responses have been made. I don't know whether there is anyone that has got a follow-up. We still have something like 10 minutes around here. Are you okay, Honorable Bakram? You now understand their predicament, but we are sending them back to the department. And the commissioner of UOI must participate there, and also the DG of DTI must participate there. How that money that DTI is actually giving to you, it can come to you through the Department of Labor, so that you have got one door that you are opening, and so that it becomes very clear. And one would also guess that even that skills fund, I don't think that it should be left alone there. If it had an impact in productivity SA, the engagement should still be made, and how it can still be accessed by the Department of Labor in order to transfer it to Productivity SA for it to utilize and achieve what it needed to be achieved. And therefore, is the engagement should include all those that did have some responsibility of giving funds to Productivity SA, that how all those monies can be collected through the Department of Labor and then made available to Productivity SA. I know that our departments always operate like in silos. People create some kingdoms of themselves, and then you'll find a DG really refusing with funds as if it is his own funds. And when it is government funds, and we've got one government, it's only that it is partitioned into departments for purposes of focus in delivery of particular services. But then they build walls between the departments, and they create problems. And when money has to be transferred to the other department, then it becomes an endless. Some of them, they even go to court, for your information. They even go to court and even get counsels and spend more money than what it is supposed to be transferred. Honorable members, I think this brings us to a point where we must thank the chair and the delegation and the commissioner of UOI for having engaged us. Probably then we are more informed, and we expect that the department will take up the challenge to ensure that they bring certainty in your funding, and we'll always ask questions to the minister and the DG when they next appear around us. How far are they to do that? And we hope that we will persuade and convince them before we disappear for this fifth term, and those that comes in the sixth term, and then they will pick up the spear and continue to ensure that this particular matter reaches its final conclusion. Thank you very much, and that brings us to the end of this meeting, and this meeting is adjourned. Long live you, long live.
we still feel that this one is different from this one.
Yes, but I mean,